The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For as little as $32 a week, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every one of them has at least a master's degree and over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/beautiful. And to get $30 off your first month and show your support for this podcast, use the code BEAUTIFUL. That's BEAUTIFUL at Talkspace.com/beautiful. There's a brand new podcast here at Earwolf you should check out now. It's called Homophilia. Grill celebrities on what they're loving, who they're loving. You can hear fascinating gay celebrities, pop culture obsessions, and experiences with dating, sex, love, all hosted by Dave Holmes, who I can say is a very good friend of mine. You might know Dave. He was a VJ on MTV. He's the guy who lost that contest to Jesse Kemp. But more importantly, great, great dude, hilarious guy, wrote a great book, friend of mine. It's also hosted by Matt McConkey, you might know from Bajillion Dollar Properties, and Bitch Sesh. It's adapted from Matt's Bitch Sesh spinoff called Rock Bottom. First guest is Cameron Esposito from Take My Wife. Dave's guested a ton of Earwolf shows. You've heard him host all over the network. He's a great, great guy. Support him. Subscribe to Homophilia and Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And if you like it, tell a friend. Hello to everybody that loves a good animal gift. It's Beautiful Anonymous. 1 hour, one phone call, no names, no holds barred.
I'd rather go one-on-one. I think it'll be more fun. And I'll get to know you, and you'll get to know me.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Beautiful Anonymous. It's your friend Chris Gethard here. Thank you guys for tuning in. Thanks for checking it out. I'm very excited about life lately, about the show lately, about you guys responding lately. It's been fun. Last week we had our homeschooled Bigfoot Hunter episode, and very divisive guy. 900 comments in the Facebook thread and the Facebook group on this one. It was not 17,000 people in that group. If you're not in there, join up. Other Beautiful Anonymous fans, it's now so big we're curating it. So our mod's really doing a good job of making it really focus on discussion of the show and things surrounding the show. One of my favorite comments comes from Anna, who says, only partway through the episode right now. I'm guessing it could take a real turn, but I just got to say this about the child ghost. People did not wear Victorian dress in the 1940s. And you put that in all caps. And I love that the historical accuracy of the ghost stories of our caller called into question. Really so thrilled. Everybody who's been saying nice things and supporting the Chris Gethard Show on True TV. Very nice of you. Thanks for supporting my work outside of the show. Very, very kind of you to check it out. Speaking of checking things out, couple live Beautiful Anonymous shows, even though I'm real busy right now. We got the Now Hear This Festival in New York. We got the Fest Gainesville, punk rock festival, but you can buy a ticket just for one of the comedy stages. Beautiful Anonymous is going to be on Gainesville, Florida. I hear Sam, one of the mods of the Facebook group, is coming out. Can't wait to meet Sam in person. Got Denton, Texas coming up. Tickets for that one not on sale yet, but keep your eyes peeled. ChrisGeth.com. Get ticket links as they're available for all those things. Some live Beautiful Anonymous coming your way. Okay, this upcoming episode, I really enjoyed it. Here's a thing that happens in life, right? Sometimes you're chit-chatting with someone. It's pretty nice. You're just having a conversation, and it feels good, laid back, like this, like my tone of voice right now. And then the content starts to get progressively different, maybe darker, interesting. And then, but you know what? The tone stays the same. This was one of those ones, and I think that speaks to the fact that I felt very comfortable with this caller. I'd like to think that that was a shared feeling. But yeah, this one goes in some directions, gets real, but still fun. In other words, classic Beautiful Anonymous. Enjoy the call.
Thank you for calling Beautiful Anonymous. A beeping noise will indicate when you are on the show with the host.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, you have the most...
Is this Chris?
Yeah. You have the most crystal clear phone connection I've ever heard. That's amazing. It's not one bit of background noise.
Oh. Holy moly. Well, I am home entirely alone. I just put my partner on a plane to Greece. So, yeah, it's quiet here.
On a plane to Greece? I also applaud your use of the phrase holy moly. It's been a long time since I've heard that.
I am originally from the Midwest, so it's deep in my genes. Phrases like holy moly and other folksy.
Yeah, what else? What else do you bust out? What do you bust out? Jeepers? You ever say jeepers?
I mean, I'm not quite Joe Biden in that sense, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not going to pull out malarkey or anything like that.
I miss that guy. Haven't heard that name in a couple months. He's probably so pissed right now. Biden's probably so pissed.
I wonder how they restrain him from just like saying whatever he wants at this point.
Oh yeah.
You know,
they put a muzzle on that old dog, on that salty old dog. He gets a muzzle.
Dr. Jill's just like giving him shots of sedative or something.
Oh yeah. Slips him into his morning oatmeal. Keep the dog on the chain. Keep the dog on the chain. Biden.
Oh, I miss him. Yeah. He was so entertaining.
Yeah. I feel like even people on the other side of the aisle have an appreciation for the ridiculousness of Biden. That's okay. It's all right.
I mean, he put in his time too, you know?
Yeah.
That's respectable.
Yeah.
So how are you doing today?
How am I doing? Let's see. I'm pretty good. I'm a little stressed out. We're leaving. I don't know when we'll release this episode. The tour will probably be done by then, but at the time we're recording this, I'm about to leave for the tour in 3 days, and I'm interested to see how that goes. Our first stop is in Vancouver. I haven't sold so many tickets in Vancouver, but that's okay. Some of the other cities are looking great, so step up.
Do you think Canadians have something against you?
No, Toronto's almost sold out. Toronto's rad. I think I've never been to Vancouver before, and we announced the tour a little last minute, so I think the first few dates, you know, that's a sacrifice.
Gotcha.
Who knows? Vancouver, I'm psyched. I've heard nothing but good things.
Are you psyched to do the podcast live?
Yeah.
Again?
I mean,
it's been a while.
Yeah, I've only done it once. It could be a disaster, but I'm very genuinely psyched to, even if the calls don't go well, I'm glad, I'm psyched I get to, I've never been out on the road and just met the people who listen to this show, and I'm very excited to do that. That's like one of the best feelings as a comedian, is when you meet the people who support your stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And I gotta say, I saw your special on HBO, and it's it's incredibly moving and important to me. And as someone who sort of is in the mental health field broadly, I really appreciated the conversations that came up around it. And
that's super nice.
Definitely have seen you talk about the issue in ways that I think we often don't because we're too scared.
Well, hey, just tried to put
myself
out there.
That's the humor, you know?
Tried to do my part. And, you know, certainly if you have any, you know, HBO Go, HBO Now, streaming platforms available today. But I don't even want to. Why even bring that up? How are you doing? You asked me how I'm doing. How are you doing?
I'm okay. It's been a long, I guess, year. In like half of my life, I've been doing something that I really love for the last 6 years, but it's starting to be something that really brings me down. I think like a lot of people who follow your work, you know, I have some depression and anxiety stuff going on. That has always been in my past. It's part of my story. So that's really what brought me into the mental health field, but it's a grind.
Yeah.
Years now, and working in nonprofits is great in some ways, but really, really difficult sometimes. And so I'm just trying to look for new opportunities. I'm in my mid 30s. It's like, how do you make a transition to something completely new?
Yeah. I will leave it up to you how much you want to say about what you do specifically. It's nothing. I would have to imagine in general. Anyone who's working for mental health-based nonprofits, short shelf life on that gig. There's got to be. Between the content of what you're dealing with and the constant scramble for funding, I bet it It has to just, you're burning the candle at all ends, I imagine.
Yeah, you know, mental health, not as sexy as many other causes. Doesn't quite bring in the dollars like many of the other things out there.
And I've personally tried to do my part to increase the sex appeal personally. Trying to bring that J. Crew sensibility to the mental health conversation.
I know, right?
Yeah.
It's like punk rock J. Crew, you know, that you're really bringing. It pulls in a few different audiences there, for sure.
Doing my part. So you're stressed out.
But yeah, it's difficult, you know. It's hard work to do, even though it's really, really rewarding and there's a lot of creativity that I get to do in my work, but I'm interested. Storytelling has really always been my background and my thing. I had another fairly useless major in college, which was history. You know, at my school, since it's a small school, housed in the same department as American Studies.
Yeah.
So American Studies.
I was an American Studies major. American Studies. I think it's fair. You could almost say American Studies is kind of like the trashier cousin of a history degree.
Well, there's only so much study of America. It's a very limited amount of time. So,
I don't know if you've ever taken any American Studies classes, but let me tell you about some of the classes I took as an American Studies major. I don't know. Maybe a class called Cults and Communes, where I read all about cults and communes. Oh, how about this one? The Cowboy in Fiction and Film. Oh, wait. Did I take a class called Murder in America? Just read about serial killers. This is basically a class that could take place on like Uproxx and four other internet sites. It's basically a class where you just read like sensationalistic links you would find on Facebook. That was my major. But I loved it. It was all right. It was dumb.
I definitely took one called The American West that was, yes, a lot about, arguably, I don't want to make anyone mad, the genocide of Native Americans in this country westward expansion occurred. So, it was really uplifting. But it was that, and we watched a lot of Westerns.
I did my cowboy in fiction and film class. I will never forget this detail. We watched college education. My parents paid a lot of money for me to watch Shanghai Noon in a college class. The Jackie Chan, Owen Wilson Western Shanghai Noon. Watched that in a class. I mean, it was a summer class, to be fair, but still, college education. Watch Shanghai Noon. Shanghai Noon.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, at least we watch like John Wayne movies, right? Like, I don't know if that's better, actually.
I watched some of those. Rio Bravo, great flick. Rio Bravo, and a legit funny movie, too.
I don't think I've seen Rio Bravo, but I'm sure my father has.
Yeah, it's a good flick. I think that's the name of it. Shane's a good one. Just chit-chatting about Westerns over here now.
Yeah.
I
really feel like this is... Yeah, go ahead.
Why'd your partner go to Greece?
So her little sister just graduated from college, and so the family decided they were going to take, you know, this is probably like one of the last times they're all going to be able to take a coordinated family trip together. So they decided to go to Greece and spend a week there. None of them had ever been. So
you couldn't horn in on
that?
Pretty
sweet graduation gift.
You don't get a ticket?
I did not get a ticket. I was not invited. It was a very insular family event. That's right. I'm going to see my parents.
How long have you been with your partner?
We just celebrated 3 years.
You got to go on the vacation at that point. You got to get a vacation invite. 3 years in? I once dated a girl for 8 years and her family went on vacation every summer and I was never invited. And they never sent me a birthday card in 8 years. I shouldn't air that publicly, but my friends remember this. But she hasn't talked to me in 5 full years now, so I don't know. I hope we settle it. I really have a lot of fondness for this person. I'm just waiting for her to be able to speak to me again. I don't know why I'm airing all this public very personal information on the podcast. Anyway, 8 years, 3 years, go to Greece. You gotta go party in Mykonos. You should be partying in Mykonos.
I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm still in the domestic trip only category. We've done other traveling together with her family.
It's a bummer.
But yeah. Not on the international ticket yet.
Wow.
So, but that's right.
It's a bummer.
Yeah. My parents want to see me, so make time for that. They retired like a decade ago. They've been living in South Carolina.
So you're going to go visit them instead.
Playing golf and hanging out. What's that?
You can go visit the parents instead.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Not bad. They got the heck out of the Midwest as soon as they could.
So. Yeah.
And as did I.
I like the Midwest. I spent some time in the Midwest. It's enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, I have some favorite cities and definitely a goddaughter back there who I really miss and love a lot. But yeah, it was the rural Midwest that I grew up in, towns less than 10,000 people. So it's like the thing to do is you drove around after everybody got their licenses. They drove around and there were like 4 stoplights in the town and then a big like square at one end. So you just drive up and down and turn around at the square until you saw your friends.
Yeah.
And then you like hang out in the parking lot most of the night.
Yeah. Based on the very few details of your life you've shared already, I would imagine that's an environment you probably want to move on from pretty quickly.
I mean, I was pretty closeted and there were like no gay people in my town. I mean, there were, but like, they all moved away, you know, they got the hell out of there before they came out.
Yeah. When you're queer in a very, very small rural town, is it like every time someone who like plays guitar moves at the age of 18, are you like, I wasn't alone? Is it that type of thing? So like anytime someone who's even mildly artsy gets the hell out, are you like, okay, all right. Is it that type of thing? I don't know.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that. It's also just every time you have a close friend who you spend a lot of time with, you know, even before I sort of even knew myself, but the town would be talking about it, right? Because all we had was agriculture and gossip. Those were our primary commodities in my tiny town. And so people would just speculate and spread rumors and things like that. And so I don't really even know the extent to which people talked about that. But I know that definitely, yeah, it was...
Well, I can tell you that's not just a Midwestern.
They knew before I did.
That's not a Midwestern phenomenon. That's at least in the 90s, that was also very common in the densely packed suburbs of northern New Jersey as well, the gossiping about
and
people's private lives.
It's small enough that people kind of know each other. It's nothing else to do.
Yeah. Agriculture and gossip.
Drink in the cornfield and talk about each other.
Yeah, we would drink in the woods. We didn't have corn. We'd drink in the woods behind the condos. You go drink in the woods. You go drink in the South Mountain Reservation, Essex County, New Jersey, the Eagle Rock Reservation, Mayapple Hill. A lot of woods to drink in where I grew up. A lot of woods.
Who says North Jersey isn't classy? I mean, look at that.
Literally everyone says North Jersey isn't classy. literally everyone, including, I would say, roughly over half the residents of North Jersey and then the rest of the world, says North Jersey isn't classy. But, you know, we got a lot of grit and we got a lot of heart. I'll trade that. I'm not a classy guy.
I mean, some of my closest, most loyal friends are from New Jersey, so.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we're not.
There's something about it.
We're not the fanciest breed of people, but we're certainly... We got a lot of heart, and I think our priorities are in the right place. And I bet you would say this about your Jersey friends. We work hard, keep it real, and we out-hustle the next guy. / girl, I don't mean to be exclusionary with my pronouns. What can you do?
They're wicked loud, too. they're really, really loud.
I'm a pretty quiet, I'm pretty reserved. I'm pretty, well, it depends.
Yeah, you're pretty quiet.
Well, because, you know, there is, people forget. I think people associate Jersey a lot of times due to things like The Sopranos and the Jersey Shore with Italian Americans. There's a big element of Italian Americans. But actually, in my understanding, the largest group of descent of ethnic pocket in New Jersey, actually Irish Americans, of which I am one, and we are a culture that's driven mostly by silence, shame, judgment. Now that I can admit it, I've gotten a little more successful the past year and a half. I've noticed my mom, Sally, now refers to me as the big shot to cut me down in a very Irish Catholic way. I've noticed that. My parents just visited me last weekend, and multiple times my mom would say, "Oh, everybody quiet down. The big shot's got something to say." So that's the Irish Catholic quiet shame jersey. It's okay. Sally's got a lot of opinions.
Really grown to love Sally.
Oh, she keeps me in my place. She don't let me forget where I came from. She didn't raise a fancy son.
Everybody needs that.
Yeah. So what else? What else do you want to talk about? I feel like I've been talking too much this episode.
I mean, this has been a nice conversation, yeah, I'd like to think.
Sometimes that's all you need.
I'm at a point right now where there are people in my life who really think that I should write a book, and I'm getting everyone's input on whether they think that that would be a good idea, and you have no emotional stake in me.
No,
so,
none.
I'm a little bit conflicted because people keep writing books right now. I thought books were pretty much dead, but now everybody's writing a book.
And wow, yeah.
Every comedian I like seems to be writing a book.
I'm writing
pretty
a book.
Soon,
I'm working book. On one. Oh, I already have. I've written. Yeah. I'm writing my third book. People don't know that. I've written two books. It's not an easy thing
really?
To do. Yeah. One was a travel book about different weird places in the state of New York, and the other was a collection of mildly amusing stories. But I'm working on
I do
third
love
one.
Those books. I don't know why I have not picked yours up, so I'll add it to the list. I just got done with Phoebe Robinson's book.
Oh, Phoebe's the best. Why don't you just write the book? Why are you worried about if you should write the book or not?
I don't know. I feel like, there's so many people out there with much more profound, amazing things to say about the world.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm just stuck on, like, why would anyone care? I don't have any really notoriety or anything like that.
But what do your friends want you to write? What do your friends want you to write the book about? What makes your friends go, well, you should write a book?
I mean, I've been telling stories for a long time, and so I have all of these stories, from growing up in this small town that are just randomly weird and kind of funny, but also serious, having come out while I was at college and having that come back to a town where my family was a more notable family in town, and how that reflected on close friends that they've had for a really long time. And then I struggled with some pretty significant mental health stuff too as a result of coming out, also homophobia and things like that. And so got very depressed, had an eating disorder, all of that kind of stuff, and very perfectionistic, and then went on and in my recovery to travel around and tell my story, particularly about mental health, and talk to and meet a lot of different people and hear their stories. So, my friends really want me to write something about that journey, but I just feel like there are a lot of stories out there like that.
Well, you know what my vote is. If you've listened to this podcast for even like half an episode, I say write the book. Because here's the thing about writing a book is if you look at it and you're like, yeah, this sucks, then it's just a file that lives on your computer and you poured a lot of time into something. But that's okay. And you know what? You said, like, I don't know why anybody would care. And I feel like that about all my work always. But then you know what's a weird thing is you put something out in the world, and then when someone does care, it's one of the most rewarding feelings you ever know. And they care in ways that you can't predict and expect. That's one thing about doing something like that, is that if you're worried that people won't care, getting ahead of yourself, because it's not your job as a creative person to worry about what happens. It's your job to make it. All you can do is send a thing out, and then they get to decide how they feel about it. You don't get to decide how they feel about it, so why even worry about how they feel about it? Just write the book, and if it's trash, you go ahead, you put it on a hard drive, and throw the hard drive in the sea. I don't know. Ocean. It's the worst that happens.
That's true.
I would listen to that story. Prominent family in town.
Yeah, very, very visible people in that town. So
movers and shakers.
And they definitely had people who did not want to be around them anymore.
Really?
News filtered back.
And you didn't even live in the town anymore.
No.
It's fucked up. Sorry, Sally.
Yeah. But I think, too, I think a lot of people found out about it. I had a weird thing, like, 6 months after I graduated from college, I came back and randomly was getting a dental cleaning at my old dentist's office. And the hygienist, you know, small town, was the mom of two people I went to high school with. And her daughter was a couple of years behind me and was struggling with the same sort of things. And sat there while I uncomfortably had my mouth open and she was sucking spit out of my mouth, asking me what she should do as a parent and how she could be more supportive of her daughter and things like that.
Because so, her daughter had recently come out?
Her daughter was struggling pretty significantly with some other, she had gone far away to school and was struggling with sort of establishing an identity there and had developed depression and an eating disorder and just wasn't sure how to support her. So from an identity transition, sort of like recreating herself perspective. And so, yeah, that was an interesting and bizarre conversation.
Wow.
Never quite had a dentist visit like that since.
I talk about this in career suicide, but I had some hemorrhoid issues. I had to go get three procedures. And one of the procedures while I was getting a hemorrhoid taken care of, the doctor asked me what I did. He's like, I've never asked you. I've met you three times now. What do you do? And I was like, I'm a comedian. He's like, you're a comedian? I'm like, yeah. And his assistant is like, my nephew does open mics. You got any advice? And I was like, no, not now. I don't have any advice right now, no. It's a well-deserved, long, pregnant pause. It's the kind of pause you get from somebody when you just start rambling about hemorrhoids. Sometimes I forget that other people have the ability to control their boundaries and not overshare. You know, I think that's a good point, though, for all of us to take a good break, stand up, stretch out, especially if you're sitting at a desk with hemorrhoids. I know you're paying. Get up, stretch, walk around. But you know what? Leave your earbuds in because we got advertisers telling you about their products and services. Use the promo codes. Really helps the show. And we'll be right back with more of The Phone Call. Guys, I know. You're listening to podcasts. You've heard about the Casper. You've heard about it. You've heard about this mattress and how amazing it is. But I'm here to personally tell you that everything you've ever heard about the Casper on a podcast is true. It's incredible. I sleep so well on it. It is nuts how much better I sleep on the Casper than any other mattress I've ever had. That is true. My wife, who is a woman of really good taste, she's had some back problems in her life. She needs a good mattress. She said she'll never sleep on another type of mattress. And here, you want to hear a little couple thing that's going to gross out some people, but some of you are going to go, aw. If I'm out of town, this is true. If I'm out of town doing gigs, my wife will say, I need you to come back here. I need to sleep in Casper with you. She doesn't say in the Casper or in bed, Casper. We refer to it as Casper as if it's a member of our household. Because guess what? At this point, it is. I love Casper. Buying the Casper is easy. You order it online, it's delivered to your door in a compact box where you're like, how do they do that? So fun to watch it come out. My wife FaceTimed me. I was in Scotland when ours came. I watched it. It was the best. It's available in the US, Canada, now the UK. Shipping and returns are free. Considering we spend one-third of our lives on mattresses. Look, you gotta sleep on a good one. You gotta sleep on one before you commit. That's why Casper gives you 100 nights to try it out, risk-free. That's over 3 months. And I'm telling you, you're gonna love this thing. You get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/beautiful using the code beautiful. Terms and conditions apply. Paging all book lovers. Today's show is supported by Book of the Month. I've been reading a ton lately, and Book of the Month makes it really easy. It's a rapidly growing service with a simple goal: to make sure you love what you read. They search high and low for new books that you wouldn't have found on your own and narrow down to the top five each month. Then you choose your favorites and they ship them right to your doorstep. With pricing starting at just $10 for new hardcover releases, that usually costs you $15 plus anywhere else. Book of the Month is a great value. Whether you get a book once a month or once a season, the exclusive prices will save you tons. I have used this service. It is pleasant. It is easy to understand. It is intuitive. And they give you all sorts of options, real wide array of options. And it's fun. It's fun to go there. Pick out your book. It's a good time. Book of the Month, bound to delight. Get your first book for $10 at bookofthemonth.com/stories. That's bookofthemonth.com/stories. Thanks again to all our sponsors for helping me bring this show to the world for free. Very cool. Use those promo codes. Check them out. And now, you know what? I'm not done talking about hemorrhoids. Let's get back to it. And his assistant is like, my nephew does open mics. You got any advice? And I was like, no, not now. I don't have any advice right now, no.
Don't think. Let's get to the hemorrhoids.
Yeah, let's can we deal with this first, and then maybe I'll talk to you about how open mics work. Maybe first you can tie this rubber band around the protrusion just inside. Okay, I'm being waved. Actually, John Delores in the booth literally started waving his hands no in an effort to get me to not share the details of what that procedure was. Okay, I guess I'll just move on. It's okay.
I feel like that's something that more people should probably know about, but research they can do on their own, maybe.
I'm sure
John agrees.
Anybody who needs to deal with that can just go walk their own path, walk their own journey. So have you ever brought your partner back to your old hometown?
No, and in fact, I haven't been back in probably over 10 years.
Yeah, and your family got out of there.
Yeah, my family left. As soon as my parents retired, they were out of there, and I had already moved away and gone to grad school. So.
And was that always your family's plan to move, or was that the fact that they were put through a tough time when people found out about your situation, was that part of why they left?
They were mostly just untethered then at that point. They, you know, had sort of built their lives and careers where they were, but all my grandparents had died by then, and all their parents were gone, and, you know, not a significant amount of siblings either for any of them, and they were all scattered. So they'd been going down to South Carolina for vacation every year since basically I was born, so it was like a second home for them. So they were just ready to not deal with winter and play golf most of the year.
That's fair.
I think that they're another concern, because of course my parents and my relationship with them also factors into this story that I would write, and I think it's hard for me to air out those things. You know, I think we come from Irish and German ancestry. Ooh. And so we're also a family who doesn't really air our lives or feelings.
Yeah, that seems like a good combo of cultures that are not looking to get emotional unless they are very drunk.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. So you come from hearty, stoic, Midwestern German stock.
Yeah.
And now here you come along.
100%.
You come along a unique person who knows in your heart that your identity is non-traditional, doesn't fit into that. You disrupt the algorithm in a big way.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the only way I could get healthy was to break that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Part of what was keeping me sick was keeping all the secrets.
And what were the types of things people were saying to your parents that made their time to? I don't want to harp on like the painful part, but that seems so. Like that seems like old school to me to a degree that it's kind of shocking. That it's like you left the town, you weren't even there anymore. But you said people kind of made life difficult for your parents just because they heard about it. That seems extreme by modern standards. Maybe I'm just out of touch.
I mean, it's definitely a town where, you know, it wasn't really things that they said. It's, you know, it's that Midwestern nice kind of thing where people, it's not what they say. It's just the sort of coldness in the way that they don't talk to you. Mm-hmm. That is a part of that. And I think some of the friendships ended up recovering, but there are others where, you know, they had like lifetime long friends that are so religious. That they put a ton of distance between the two families. People who had basically grown up with their children, and that was just a little disappointing. And of course, there's another family that you know, retired about the same time, and they're the best of friends, you know, now. I think it really, to them and how they explain it to me, is it just really illuminated, you know, who the good ones were and the ones that were gonna, they wanted to be part of their lives.
And how,
but you know, it was a journey for all of us.
Yeah. I was going to ask, how did your, did your parents ever waver? Or did they have your back from the start, or did they have to be convinced, or how does that go?
I mean, I think my parents, I don't think they ever knew that they knew another gay person. Just generationally and where they lived, like the radius in which they existed in geographically, the communities they're a part of, it just never came up. I mean, by the time I went to college in the early 2000s, even the college I went to, which was a like private liberal arts school, no one was really out there. There was no LGBT group or anything like that. So I had a lot of shame around it. I really felt like a failure, and I happened to be an only child, so it didn't really help. I feel like I was the lone basket for all of my parents.
Oh, wow. That seems like everything's lining up for worst case scenario as far, like you don't even have any siblings your age. Just be like, hey, mom, dad, get over it. Who cares? Here's how it works. Here's the, you don't even have that. You're in a vacuum.
Right.
Vacuum.
But they're, we never talked about it. So I never knew how they felt about the issue beforehand. I just kind of had to figure it out. I had three really good friends who were basically chosen family who were on board and really supportive. And I went into that conversation that way, and it took them a while. I think they didn't push me away. It's a really good sort of coming out outcome in comparison to a lot of other folks have, you know. I didn't get put out of the house. They didn't stop helping me pay for school or anything like that. But pretty soon after that, my eating disorder got so bad anyway that they were so concerned about my health. It was just something else to focus on. So we focused on that for a couple of years.
Wow.
And in that small town, I was valedictorian, and I was really captain of three varsity sports and marching band and jazz band and all that kind of stuff. I was involved in everything, student council. And
so an achiever. Yeah. You're an achiever.
I was an achiever and a perfectionist. And the way that I kept all of that going was to really bottle things up. So
yeah,
it all kind of ate away at me.
I'm hearing all this stuff, hearing everything you've been through, and I think there's only one reaction that's proper, that really makes sense in any way, and that reaction is, holy moly. I think that's the only thing I can say this. Holy moly.
Holy moly. I feel very... Go ahead.
No. You feel very what?
Every time I hear that, I got really excited. I watch a lot of HGTV because when I'm feeling down, it's nice to watch something go from looking really awful to looking really pretty.
Uh-huh. Oh,
and
wow.
There's a show called Fixer Upper that the main dude, Chip, he says holy moly all the time.
Uh-huh.
And it was like a validation. Like, I'm not 100 years old or whatever. I'm just folksy.
Yeah.
Folksy.
Now, can I ask if this is too painful? We're going to move on from the folksy nature of HGTV and get back into the pain and the pathos. I don't want to bring up something too painful. It's eating disorders. I know people who have had them. I know people close to me who have had them. I'm certainly not one to judge anybody else's mental issues. That is one that I just don't, I'm not well acquainted with the internal conversation that's happening with those, you can see from the outside, is they're brutal. They're truly brutal. You watch people put themselves through physical hell because there's some sort of mental torture happening. But what is, like, when you get caught in that loop, What's the dialogue going there? What do you? Because it also hits a point. You know, anybody I've known who has a severe eating disorder, it hits a point where physically, it becomes clear that a person is sick, and it's not. This is not like it's causing a person to become more visually appealing or beautiful, and the person can't see that, and that's a really hard, horrific thing to see from the outside. So what, from someone who's been in the shit, tell me about your perspective, because I don't know this one.
Yeah, I think that's a big piece of it, is that a lot of people don't really understand them, and certainly it wasn't something, you know, that we talked about in health class, really. And I think still a lot of what we see is like anorexia and bulimia when it gets spread up, but you know, a lot of people, you know, sort of the highest statistics are people with binge eating disorder. And all of it has to do with sort of a loss of control around food and eating and sometimes exercise and things like that. For me, as someone, you know, personally, I struggled with anorexia, and you're totally on point. Because you understand anxiety, I think you understand eating disorders a lot more than you think, because they're often diagnosed together, because it is definitely the dialogue that is going on in your head. I was telling myself that I was a failure. You know, I was in a relationship with someone who also wasn't out really after I came out. And so it was just so many secrets. And it's like, for me, in my head, it was just like, I don't deserve to eat. If I can't be perfect in this way, then I will be more perfect in another way. And I got a lot of positive feedback. You know, I started losing weight and people would say, "Hey, you look great. Have you lost weight?" And I'd be like, "Yeah, I have," you know? And that felt really good at a time when I internally felt pretty shitty. You know, that's just the tip of the iceberg, though, with an eating disorder, because then you're right, it keeps going from there, and you feel like you have control over that thing. You have control, in my case, over what I was eating and how many miles I was running and all that kind of stuff. But really, it's the eating disorder who you, instead of being in conversation with an eating disorder, it's the eating disorder that has both voices and the dialogue in your head. And so it's this sham of a conversation that keeps playing and replaying in your head. So for me, I was diagnosed with anorexia and depression, but also obsessive compulsive disorder. And I was just keeping track all the time of, and thinking about what I was eating and how much I was exercising and doing that math all the time. And it's a dangerous cycle to get in, you know? Go ahead.
No, you go.
I was just going to say, I mean, I think it's hard for people. It's really hard for people to understand, but like, I have more than one friend who, you know, they'll put their destination of wherever they're going in Google Maps to get somewhere. And they'll see that estimated time of arrival. And then they'll be like, "Oh, I can beat that." And then they'll drive like idiots to get there. And that's dangerous too. And it's sort of, it's a similar premise. It's like you have this obsession and this compulsion to beat that time. And you put yourself at risk in order to do something that isn't at all healthy or good for you.
Does the dopamine that comes with those compliments and the satisfaction that comes from that feeling that you're in control, that manages to trump like the point when you have no energy and you're getting migraines and like your blood sugar's so low that you're like passing out? Like they overcome that. The physical side, the mental side trumps the physical side, huh? Because I tell you, if I don't eat for like 90 minutes, I'm like, "Yo, let's get to work." I feel like we all overuse the word starving in America. Like there's a lot of us who like, "Yo, I'm starving," and forget that that's a real thing that some other people have to do. I'm like, "Oh, it's been like 2 hours since I ate. I'm starving. Let me eat." And I can't imagine overcoming the physical desire to eat.
Yeah, it takes, I mean, it really is just all of the messages that your brain is sending. It's like the eating disorder just shouts over all of them. I mean, the popular misconceptions is like people want to look like, you know, models on TV and all that kind of stuff, and that's what triggers it. Sometimes that's true, but I think there's, you know, there's always something more going on that perpetuates it. And certainly I was looking in the mirror and thinking, oh, like, I don't look good. But I was also thinking, like, this is all I have. This is the only thing that I feel like I can control. And if I don't do this, then I can't keep everything else sort of tacked down and hidden away.
Yeah.
All the feelings inside, like, this is how I'm keeping that tarp over this big pile of shit.
Yeah.
And once it's a little bit like depression, you know, the in that, you know, you sort of, your brain learns to a little bit, at least in my experience of it, my brain almost just like disconnected from the desire to eat. I couldn't receive those messages anymore, much in the same way as like when you have depression, it's not just that you're sad, it's just that you can't feel any of the things that are coming in at you.
And that control thing, I will say, I've never had an eating disorder, but I will say that feeling that everything's out of control and you can find a way to demonstrate control is a big thing. I know for me, one of the things where, here's a thing that happens with my head stuff that I always know, okay, maybe it's time to bump up my next appointment, is I do all this counting stuff, which I don't think is uncommon. I try to control the world via counting. That's the thing. Like if I'm very depressed and stressed out, and I'm waiting for a subway train in New York City, and the train is not coming quick enough for my satisfaction, I'll start counting down from a certain number, and I will become convinced that the train has to arrive before I hit zero. I do this all the time when I know I'm really starting to stress out too hard. And my shrink has pointed out to me that the counting is an early indicator that I need to take a deep breath, send her an email, and we need to get on Skype. Because all my therapy is via Skype right now because it's 2017 and she's semi-retired. But that control, right. Control goes a long way.
I'm curious, what do you have, like, if it doesn't get here by zero, what then will happen?
Oh, God, it's the worst. I feel like I failed. I feel like the world is not working the right way. I feel like I'm the only one who gets it. I start to feel like everyone around me is operating under these false pretenses, and that if the world would just operate by my standards, then everything could move in order and go the right way. And it's just not. And it makes me feel like the outlier. And then what will happen is I will go home and I will maybe be in a bad mood. And sometimes my wife, I will just say to her, hey, I'm not in a good spot right now, and she will be able to talk me through it. Sometimes I won't even be able to express that. And generally what will happen then is I will just go in a room and I will just sit in the room and I will wait for it to pass. This counting thing. Why can't the train just get there? And sometimes, you know what I'll do is I'll intentionally forget what number I'm at, so I have to start over. And that's my trick. If I'm like, it's not coming in time, then I'll just kind of distract myself with some other thought and I'll go, no, now I got to restart. And I might as well restart from a higher number. But it doesn't count unless I get to zero, you know? Like, so if I forget the number and I have to there's a web. There's a web of weird thoughts in my head from time to time. But I tell you, the Wellbutrin and Lamictal, they help a lot. They help a lot. That sweet, sweet Butrin. That sweet Lamictal. Smooth things out, baby. Get me that Lamotrigine. That's the generic name. Lamotrigine. Bupropion.
Yeah, I'm glad that Wellbutrin works for you. I know it doesn't work for everyone.
So. Oh, yeah. Not everything works for everybody. For me, though, I like it, man. Every morning, throw that Wellbutrin in there, nice gulp of water. You know what I say? Ah, let's get the day started. Wellbutrin is a drug I do enjoy. Helps my life a lot. But, you know, why am I giving them so much airtime on the show? They're not even a sponsor. Speaking of sponsors, we've got a whole bunch. They have products, they have services that'll enrich your life. They also have promo codes that you can use that will help this show, Beautiful Anonymous. Do check them out. Hope you enjoy them. And we will be right back. These days, you can get practically everything on demand, can't you? Right? Like this podcast, you listen to when and listen to whenever you want. Convenient for you. You're driving, doing laundry, whatever. That's when you listen. It's up to you. So let me ask you something. Why are you still going to the post office dealing with their limited hours, working on their terms? A life is built now where you get to put it on your terms. Why are you doing that? Especially considering that you can get postage on demand with stamps.com. Anything you can do at the post office. You can do it right from your desk with stamps.com. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package using your own computer, your own printer. And unlike the post office, stamps.com, it doesn't close. You're not going to go stand on a line forever just so it closes. You get postage when you need it 24/7. I love it. It's really great. We got a post office at the end of our block. My wife still uses it all the time. Her album came out. I'm telling you, stamps.com was a lifesaver. The amount of hours it has saved both of us is crazy. It's a simple thing. It's a no-brainer. Right now, you use my code BEAUTIFUL, you get a special offer. 4-week trial, includes postage and a digital scale. You don't wait. You go to stamps.com. Before you do anything else, you click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage, type in BEAUTIFUL. That is stamps.com. Enter the code BEAUTIFUL. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. Thanks again to all the advertisers that helped make this show happen. And now let's finish off the phone call. Throw that Wellbutrin in there. Nice gulp of water. You know what I say? Ah, let's get the day started.
It's nice, though. It sounds like your wife is fully engaged and equipped to be there for you during those times and really understand and not take it personally.
Yeah. And sometimes that does happen. And I think what you just said that's very true is like, and that I think some people don't give themselves enough credit on, is you didn't say she's fully equipped to help, because she's not, but she is fully equipped to be there. And those are different things. And sometimes our fear of not being able to help makes us bail on being there. And that's a big thing that freaks me out. But I think that's so beautiful the way you phrased it. My wife is very willing to be there. Sometimes she is like, did I do something? And I'm like, no, I'm crazy. You married a crazy person. I have an HBO special about it. I'm crazy. Crazy. It's public knowledge at this point. It's out there.
Yeah, that's my partner is very similar in that she will engage me to a point and then she'll say, okay. Like last night I was having some really circular anxiety and she was just like, okay. At this point now, though, you're just being crazy. And it's just like, oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Like, nice reset. Nice reset.
Yeah. Nice. Sounds like a good
that's
partner.
What I, call, I mean, I talk to a lot of students who are trying to be good friends and siblings, you know, to people in their lives. And they ask me all the time, you know, my friend is struggling with this and how do I help them? And I was like, you don't have to help them. You just have to be willing to listen and to be prepared to give them the resources they need when they decide that they're ready to get them.
I think, yes, I think that's true. I think there's a weird thing that people don't realize, which is there is a middle ground. Like just because you can't help someone doesn't mean you're not helping them, if that makes sense. Just because you can't solve a problem, the fear of not being able to help makes people not even try. But very often the act of trying and failing goes a really long way. And something like that. I don't know. I'm no expert. I'm not even particularly smart.
Especially with anxiety or eating disorders, like your friend might get just really pissy with you sometimes.
Oh.
because they're so in their own head that you're disrupting them. But you got to be able to roll with that and not take it personally. So the good friends and the good helpers are to learn how to walk that line. And I think we're more equipped now than we've ever been with resources that friends can be like, okay, I can't help you with this, but you know, you can text the number now and have someone text back at you support. Like,
yeah,
how great is that? Like crisis text line exists. So you can sit there with your friend while they text with someone. They don't even have to talk on the phone.
Yeah. Pretty sweet. I wish I had that when I was a kid.
Yeah.
High school, college.
I know, right?
I didn't have any of that. Here's what I had.
I know.
Sit in my room in the dark playing a keyboard for 9 hours, praying someone would hear it and ask me, why are you doing this? What's wrong? That's what I had. play a Casio keyboard for like 9 hours until my roommates were like, shut the fuck up. And me going, just someone ask me what's wrong. Please just ask me what's wrong. That's what I had. I have no text crisis line.
For me, it was those dark, angsty AIM away messages.
Oh, yeah. The AOL Instant Messenger away message. Classic cry for help. Classic cry for help. For anybody who's too young to remember AOL Instant Messenger, it was kind of a precursor to GChat, AOL America Online, early internet platform, chat with people. You can leave a little away message. I bet you quoted a nice song lyric here or there. Would you quote a nice Depeche Mode song lyric? The Cure, put something.
I was so into Sarah McLachlan. Ooh. It was just ridiculous.
What were some of your away messages? Do you remember any of these away messages?
Oh, God.
Mine would have been, I don't know, mine probably would have been Smith's lyrics. Like, I would have put up, like,
oh, I'm sure.
To die by your side is such a heavenly way to die. And then all my friends would have been like, is everything okay? And I would have been like, yeah, everything's fine. And I would take it down. I would put up, like, John Stark's rules and, like, just change it like that.
good deflection. I'm sure mine was, like, from... anything that Sarah McLachlan did on Fumbling Towards Ecstasy would have probably gone up in there.
Like Tori Amos?
There's Tori Amos for sure.
Yeah, we sound like a similar age, and I know every lady in my life around the late 90s, Tori Amos was speaking for her. Liz Phair? Ooh, Liz Phair.
Yeah. Liz Phair, Ani DiFranco. Yeah.
Exile in Guyville. That was the cross. I will say, because I feel like some of that music was a little out of my scope, but Liz Phair was kind of the bridge between that world of feminist empowerment, late 90s pop, and straight up punk rock. Like, Liz Phair was the bridge, man.
Yep, for sure.
Exile Guyville, fucking
play
run.
And replay a divorce song.
Ooh.
Oh, fucking run, yeah.
Fucking run is a classic. I think I know all the lyrics to that song. Oh, great. Who knows?
An old AIM.
Well, I just want to say before, you know, we got 10 minutes left, so let me just get this on record. I'm glad that you wound up okay. And it's super nice that you're helping others.
Thank you. I feel the same way about you. I'm glad you're still here.
Thanks. Yeah. Worked out pretty nice after all was said and done. Although this is all going to be over in 6 months. That's the other thing I always have, man. Girl, you got an HBO special. Got your TV show. Yeah, fancy boy. This will all come crashing down any minute now. But you know what? Let me say another thing. You were saying that you were saying that it's like stressing you out to work in the industry that you've wound up working in, helping other people. And I would say one thing to keep in mind that I don't know if you've heard this before, but maybe you should, is also – maybe you've done your part, and that's more than most people do, and you don't need to feel guilty if you walk away from that either.
Yeah. I probably need to incorporate that into what I'm telling myself. I think there is a lot of guilt after so many years of investment. I think there's a lot of guilt in knowing that I can't do it anymore.
That's okay too.
I don't give up easy.
Most people don't even try. And you don't, you know, how much trouble has your perfectionism gotten you into over the years? Maybe you got to be okay with the idea that this one doesn't end perfectly. Maybe that'll be a victory for you as well. Because I tell you, with my stuff, the mental health stuff, we're talking about it in conversation. That's fine. But as far as me publicly, the work I produce, for years, people have been sending me emails and Facebook messages asking me for help. And it hit a point where I was like, I can't save everybody. My good friend J.D. Amato, who I work with, my right-hand man on most of my comedy, stepped in. He's like, dude, you're a comedian. You can't fix everybody. You can't help everybody. You just can't. So I stopped answering all those messages. And now, you know what I can say? I can go, here's a nice link to a fine service called HBO Now. And everything I've said about this issue exists there. And I think I've done my part. And I think I'm okay with the fact that I've done my part and I can move on. You owe it to yourself to move on at some point, too.
Yeah, I'd like to be able to to be funny.
Yeah.
I feel like from 9 to 5, I'm just not a very fun person. And my partner has definitely said, you become a totally different person once you're done working.
Yeah, you want to do the comedy? You're trying to write this storytelling. It's the funny storytelling, huh?
I mean, I certainly incorporate humor because I just don't feel that there are too many mental health stories or life stories really that you can tell without it. But I wouldn't say that I'm going down that road.
Yeah. I think you got to write this book. I think you got to write the book.
Yeah, I think I do.
Because what's the worst that happens? Is it a disaster?
What's the worst that can happen?
Gets terrible reviews and no one ever reads it. And so what? It's not that bad. I've done so many things that went that route. But you know what? Even if it does go that route and you get one person, you run into one person someday who's like, hey, I read that at the exact time I needed it, it erases all the insecurity about the rest of it. And that I can say because I've lived that. I've done a lot of terrible work that no one has liked. And then every once in a while, I fart something out and people are like, hey, dude, good job. Helped me out. And I forget about all the failures.
Yep. That's a good reminder. That's definitely been true for most of my life. And it's usually the stuff that I think the least about that is the most successful.
I have a weird feeling you've already started writing the book, haven't you?
I've written maybe a page of ideas. That's as far as I've gotten.
I knew it. That's a start. Now pour some fuel on the fire. Burn this motherfucker down. Let's do it.
Sorry, Sally.
It's
off the rails.
It's not that off the rails. Some of them go really off the rails. You should hear the ones of this. You should hear the episodes we don't release. Those go off the rails. Those are some of the things, some of these ones the world will never hear. Uh-huh.
I feel like we should leave on a lighter note. I mean,
sure.
It's been, you know, mental health and eating disorders and life advice.
Whatever you want. We've just gotten a couple laughs in too. So you made a couple of funny barbs about Joe Biden up top. A couple of gags. I was waved off from telling a very hilarious story about hemorrhoids, but I'll talk to John Delore about that after we stop recording. It's waved off. No, I'm not going to record it now. I'm not. No. What's done is done. The moment has passed. Everyone can probably figure out what happened based on the details I was already offering up.
Yeah, I got a pretty clear picture.
Yeah. Yeah, we got 5 minutes left. You want to end on a lighter note, 5 minutes left. What would you like that lighter note to be? And I'll help facilitate that lighter note.
I don't know. I keep thinking about one of my friends sent me this Instagram message last night, which was this little girl in the backseat of in like her car seat who was like didn't understand how the American electoral process worked, which is fine because she's probably 2 or 3. But she was the most expressive little girl ever. And she was very confused about where, as she pronounced it, Barack Obama went and why that guy, meaning Trump, lives in the big house.
Yeah.
And what happened to Hillary. And so it was hilarious, but also like, yeah. And her mom tried to help her understand how Hillary got more votes but was not the president. She didn't understand because, you know, when she voted for pizza at school versus the hamburger, like that made the pizza got the most vote.
Yeah. There wasn't like a percentage of the tables outweighed the other tables. So even though pizza gets more votes, we do hamburgers because the one table. If we're just talking about recounting adorable things we've seen on the internet, I'll tell you this, and I've never talked about this publicly. One of my favorite activities has become watching my wife watch animal GIFs. That's become like my favorite hobby. Just last night on Reddit, there was a GIF of a prairie dog in a weird human outfit eating cheese. It was on the front page, well-dressed, fancy prairie dog eating cheese. And I looked at that GIF and I just turned the screen of my computer to old Hallie and said, hey. And she looked up and she immediately went, oh, boo-boo. Oh, boo boo, look at your little feet. And she just was, until I turned the screen away, she would just react. Oh, we just, yeah, you can, prairie dog loves cheese. Look up prairie dog loves cheese on the internet, and it's the best. Are you near a computer right now? Are you near a computer right now?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, look up prairie dog loves prairie cheese. Dog. You'll find it. It's got like an ascot on. It's got an ascot on. Eating the cheese. He loves the cheese.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm just going to quiet down and watch you react to the prairie dog eating cheese.
Oh, my God. He looks so self-satisfied. Or she? He? She? Unclear. Unclear from this angle. It reminds me of that prairie dog in the where they voiced the animals, that video on YouTube. I like watching people watch this video where the guy's just like, Alan, Alan, like calling across the prairie.
A lot of good, dumb stuff on the internet.
Looks like this guy.
My number one, anytime I'm depressed, we've talked about depression so much. Anytime I'm depressed, one of the first things I go to, you ever watch that drunk Ewoks video?
Yes.
That's my favorite thing. It's ever happened on planet Earth.
I go back and watch episodes of My Drunk Kitchen. I have like favorite episodes of My Drunk Kitchen.
And I'm not familiar. Watch. I'm not familiar with My Drunk Kitchen.
Oh, okay. All right.
Check it out.
How much time do we have left?
Minute 15.
Minute 15. Great. Okay. So here's the download. On YouTube, there is a content creator named Hannah Hart.
Oh, I've met Hannah Hart.
Enough,
I do know this. I know My Drunk Kitchen.
Yeah.
Yes, I've met Hannah. She's very sweet.
Yeah, but the best by far are American Strudel Parts 1 and 2 and Onion Rings. Those make me laugh every time.
I am familiar
with
the show.
Between that and Parks and Rec, that is the go-to.
Check out the episode Pie Mary. Catch a little glimpse of your boy Gether.
Pie Mary, I know.
A lot of people in the beautiful anonymous world don't understand. People in beautiful anonymous listeners very often don't understand that I do other things besides this, and they are shocked to find out that I've been on TV every once in a while.
Absolutely. We get really excited when we see you.
Yeah, it's very sweet and very nice.
Like, I'll text each other.
Hey, we got 15 seconds left. I've enjoyed this conversation. I'm glad you're doing okay. How do you want to close it out?
Thanks, Chris. This has been a really great chat, and I appreciate you giving me the advice, the kick in the pants that I needed to move forward. Thank you.
Caller, thank you so much. Thanks for reminding me. Go watch the Drunk Kitchen. Funny stuff. And again, I hope you write that book. I really do. What's the worst that happens? That's what we always have to ask ourselves, that about stuff. If you're wondering if you should or shouldn't do something, you always should, because the worst that happens is you fail. And then who cares? It's okay. Rebuild. Life's fun that way. Thank you for calling. And thank you to everybody for listening. Very sincerely, thank you so much for listening at all to the show. Thanks for the people who helped make it, including special occasion, back on the deck, the Reverend John Delore. Jared O'Connell peaced out for the week. I don't know why he's too good for us now. John Delore back. And also John is one of the guys who built this show along with Greta Cohn. Big thanks to her. We miss her. I missed her. And thanks to Harry Nelson, who's in the booth, as always, helping to guide this community where it's going to go. Thank you to Shell Shag for all the music. You guys are the best. So much love to you, Shell Shag. You want to know more about me? Getting out on the road, chrisgeth.com. All my dates are up there. Your eyes peeled for the Chris Gethard Show coming to True TV. You like Beautiful Anonymous? You can help out. Go to Apple Podcasts, rate, review, subscribe. I'm not kidding when I say that those things go a real long way. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back next week with more Beautiful Anonymous. Paging all book lovers. Book of the Month. It's a rapidly growing service with a simple goal: to make sure you love what you read. Browse the 5 best books of the month. Discover titles you would not have found on your own. With exclusive pricing starting at just $10, you can get your favorites shipped to your doorstep for less. Book of the Month, bound to delight. And get your first book for $10 at bookofthemonth.com/stories. Next time on Beautiful Anonymous... I am, filled in on the mysteries of the big hole.
This sounds terrible, but it's totally sci-fi that, like, my body would open up and a human would be ejected from it. Like, I can't. That's, like, way too...
Too sci-fi.
Too, like, sci-fi. Way too alien. Wait. No.
The most natural process that's existed since the beginning of time and has led to all of us being here. Too sci-fi. That's not a real thing that exists on Earth.
I mean, try and wrap your head around that. That's, like, so messed up. What do you mean my body opens into this giant hole and then a baby comes out? Like, what are you talking about?
Well, when you put it like that, it's not so appealing.
But that's what it is.
Does the body open, like, up into a big hole? It's the first I'm hearing of this.
You gotta dilate to, like, 10 centimeters.
That's next time on Beautiful Anonymous.
Oh, hey, everybody, I'm Dave Holmes.
And I'm Matt McConkey, the sidekick that Dave Holmes never wanted.
You're not a sidekick. You are a full co-host.
Oh, please. I should be so lucky to have that title.
Come on. We are on an equal footing here. And homophilia.
Homophilia.
It's all about us, me and Matt, talking to a wide variety of LGBTQI+ individuals about their lives, about their pop culture diets, what they're watching on TV, what they're loving, and
who they're loving.
Who
so
they're loving.
We're going to take a deep dive into their personal lives, ask some very intrusive questions, you know, about what their current dating status is, how did they come out, what was their biggest heartbreak, what's going on in their Grindr account? Can we see their Grindr account?
Can we improve their Grindr account?
Oh, yeah.
We'll be releasing new episodes every Friday.
Homophilia is coming to you beginning Friday, August 11th, right here on Earwolf.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.